This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to the Daily Digest on the Bigger Picture. I'm T. Shao Eek with Juliet Jacobs and Sharmila Ganesan in the studio. We have two stories for you today, starting with our first one.
Yes, and a new report by Amnesty International has actually warned that Facebook and Google's omnipresent surveillance of billions of people poses a systemic threat to human rights. So is it time for a radical transformation of the tech giant's core business model? We're going to discuss that.
So who hasn't experienced this before, right? You're scrolling through Facebook, not during work hours, of course. You click on an article about a particular topic, say about going zero waste, and the next thing you know, you're served with advertisements for reusable straws and bamboo toothbrushes. Worse yet, though, sometimes you just talk about a topic with friends, family members, probably with your phone lying around somewhere near you, and then the ads appear on your social media feed. And I've experienced that many times before as well. I remember one, the first time it struck me that this was possibly happening was I was talking about needing to buy diapers, and then ads for diapers came out.
So I know, I think it's safe to say that most of us know that we're being tracked online. And I think most of us have actually accepted it and we almost shrug it off, you know. It's like, okay, well, that's just how it is. Yeah. But a new report by Amnesty International has made the bold case that we need to stop accepting the status quo and start seeing it for what it really is. And they call it a violation of our human rights on an unprecedented scale. And of course, perpetrated by two American companies, Facebook and Google. So Amnesty International warned in this new report, which is titled Surveillance Giants, that Facebook and Google's omnipresent surveillance of billions of people, this poses a systemic threat to human rights. And it called for a radical transformation of the tech giant's core business model.
So you can't dispute that Google and Facebook have helped to connect the world and do provide crucial services to billions of people. Yeah. And to participate meaningfully in today's economy and society and to realize their human rights, people do rely on access to the internet and the tools that Google and Facebook offer. But despite the real value of these services, Google and Facebook's platforms come at a systemic cost. According to the Amnesty report, Amnesty International believes that the company's surveillance-based business model forces people to make a Faustian bargain where they are only able to enjoy their human rights online by submitting to a system predicated on human rights abuse. So firstly, it's an assault on the right to privacy on an unprecedented scale, right? And then it's a series of knock-on effects that pose a series that poses a serious risk to a range of other rights, from let's say freedom of expression and opinion to freedom of thought and even the right to non-discrimination.
And according to Kumi Naidu, the Secretary General of Amnesty International, Google and Facebook have amassed unparalleled power over the digital world by harvesting and monetizing the personal data of billions of people, and their insidious control of our digital lives undermines the very essence of privacy and is one of the defining human rights challenges of our era. You know, in 1984, anyone? And he goes on to say that to protect our core human values in the digital age, which are dignity, autonomy, privacy, there needs to be a radical overhaul of the way big tech operates and to move to an internet that has human rights at its core.
Oh, that's a tough one. Yeah. I mean, Google and Facebook, they have established dominance over the primary channels that most of the world, I mean, outside of China, of course, that is, that the rest of the world relies on to realize their rights online. So the various platforms that they own, so that includes Facebook, Instagram, you know, Google search, YouTube, WhatsApp. I think we've used every single one of those today in just in our work context, right?
Yeah.
I mean, all of that facilitate the way people seek and share information, the way they engage in debate, the way they just participate in society. Even Google's Android, that underpins most of the world's smartphones. So while other big tech companies, including Apple, Amazon and Microsoft, they've accrued significant power in other areas, it is the platforms owned by Facebook and Google specifically that have become fundamental to how people engage and interact with each other. You know, is effectively a new global power public square.
So we all know this. These tech giants offer these services to billions like us without charging a fee. Mm-hmm. Instead, we pay for the services with our intimate personal data. So we're being constantly tracked across the web and in the physical world as well, you know, through, for example, our devices, which are connected to the internet. So while we acknowledge that we all signed up for it, Amnesty International argues that this isn't the internet that people signed up for when these platforms first started out. So they argue in the report that the internet is vital for people to enjoy many of their rights. Yet billions of people have no meaningful choice but to access this public space based on terms that are dictated by Facebook and Google.
And Amnesty's Kumi Naidu again says, and I quote, "To make it worse, Google and Facebook chipped away at our privacy over time. We are now trapped. Either we must submit to this pervasive surveillance machinery where our data is easily weaponized to manipulate and influence us," strong words there, "or forego the benefits of the digital world. This can never be a legitimate choice. We must reclaim this essential public square so we can participate without having our rights abused." So that's from Amnesty International's Kumi Naidu.
So Google and Facebook's platforms are underpinned by algorithmic systems that process huge volumes of data to infer incredibly detailed characteristics about people and also to shape their online experiences. So advertisers then pay Facebook and Google to be able to target people with advertising or specific messages.
Hence my diaper advertisements. And, you know, it was only with the Cambridge Analytica scandal, I think, where data from 87 million people's Facebook profiles were harvested and used to micro-target and manipulate people for political campaigning purposes, that finally opened the world's eyes to the capabilities such platforms possess to influence people at scale, and hence the risk that they could be abused by other actors. And shocking as that may have been, actually that incident was just the tip of the iceberg, stemming from the very same model of data extraction and analysis inherent to both Facebook and Google's businesses.
Yeah, so back to that Amnesty report, it argues that both Facebook and Google are also exacerbating the threat of government surveillance, interestingly, by amassing so much personal information in the first place. So basically, the company's data troves are like almost attractive honeypots for governments.
Absolutely.
You know?
I mean, they can do so much more than governments can.
Exactly. And, you know, just this month, we learned of a plot by Saudi Arabia to actually recruit Twitter employees to access private data on thousands of Twitter users. And those, of course, included prominent critics of the government.
Mm. And we've heard many cases of government sort of actively using data like this to track dissidents, right?
Yes.
Kumi Naidu also had this to say. We have already seen that Google and Facebook's vast architecture for advertising is a potent weapon in the wrong hands. Not only can it be misused for political ends with potentially disastrous consequences for society, but it also allows all kinds of new exploitative advertising tactics, such as preying on vulnerable people struggling with illness, mental health, or addiction. Because these ads are tailored to us as individuals, they are hidden from public scrutiny.
Isn't that terrifying?
Yes.
It reminds me of Minority Report, which, you know, when it first came out, seemed bizarre and unrealistic. And we're literally living in it now,
you know. And, you know, so I spoke to lawyer Fung Ching Leong, who is also the chairman of the KL Bar Information Technology Committee, and he's also a member of the Bar Council's Intellectual Property Committee. So I wanted to get his thoughts on this. And I started off first by asking him whether he agreed with the report calling this an abuse of human rights.
Well, I won't go to the extent of saying that this is a human right abuse. Mm-hmm. Yes, there seems to be some pressure for you to use Facebook and Google, because there's maybe probably no second best choice. But there's always a choice to say that, you know, I'm not going to use Facebook, I'm not going to use Google. There are, of course, second best choices out there, but may not work as well as the Facebook or Google. But to say that this is human right abuse, I wouldn't go to that extent.
You wouldn't say that. Okay, but you know, Amnesty is also arguing it's not just an assault on the rights to privacy and at an unprecedented scale, right? They're also saying that from there, there's a series of knockoff effects, you know, that continue to pose a serious risk to a range of other rights. So that's from freedom of expression and opinion, right down to freedom of thought, and then to the right to non-discrimination. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, indeed, their business model does affect how we live and how other people would do. Regulators are stepping in to try to control them to ensure that they don't misuse person data and so on and so forth. Again, these people are driven by profit.
Right.
They are a business. They have to run as efficiently as possible, as profitable as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, they should also, of course, take into account of what are the rippling effects that will be caused by what they do.
That's right.
Perhaps the authorities or the government should also step in to control them to ensure they go to the right path. Or otherwise, the civil society can always step in and put in some pressure for them to ensure that they do not do what to cause all this rippling effect.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I also through my work, I also realized that Facebook and Google, they are also been dealing with a lot of civil society
mm-hmm.
to work out something better for everyone. But also, I also realized that they also put in, they also fund sometimes all these civil societies. So when they are funding them, so in other words, that if they're relying on the civil society, are relying on their funds, then we have a problem of them being controlled by, this powerful giant.
Sounds quite sinister. The report also echoed what you said, that governments, they need to urgently take action to overhaul this whole business model so that it can protect us from corporate human rights abuses. So they're saying through things like enforcement of robust data protection laws, an effective regulation of these big tech in line with human rights law. How likely, though, is that to actually happen?
Well, it depends, because laws of this kind are very territorial based.
Mm.
So if Malaysia decides to put such kind of law, it may not have much effect on Facebook or Google because they are basically based in the US or in Europe.
Right.
So what they have now in Malaysia is part of their marketing arm or the sales arm. So any of the law does not really affect them.
Mm.
What would affect them? Probably it would be the regulations or the government of the US or the European Union or the big giants basically to introduce those type of laws to them. Alternatively, is all the countries gang up together and put in a treaty and put and say that this is the standard format or this is the model law every country should adopt for all their tech companies. And this is all to ensure that the data is being protected. There's no surveillance by all these corporate beings and so on and so forth.
So, Facebook, of course, they responded quite typically by saying that, this is just part of the basic function of the internet, this whole surveillance thing. And like you mentioned earlier, so, it's part of their business model. What can we do then as consumers? Is it just a matter of not using these platforms?
Yes, unfortunately, there's nothing much we can do other than stop using it, or two is to make enough noise for government to act.
Mm.
Of course, there a better choice would be to give an option for users to turn off certain functions,
mm-hmm.
and we make that function accessible and easily accessible to everyone. You don't plant it deep inside into one of their options, or plant it in the terms and conditions. So if let's say there's one click button to press. I do not want to be. I don't want my data to be processed for the purpose of surveillance or advertising. Or I want to turn off every I want this phone to be completely private. No other data can go out. Some form of that function.
Mm.
But it looks like even the people who built, Google built our Android platforms, would of course, because they live by data.
Mm.
Making use of people's data to profit. It will be difficult for them to just turn off that privacy protection function for everyone.
I mean, of course, the option is that they start charging people, and then it's a choice, isn't it? If you want
all right, yes.
But I mean, obviously, people see free things, and that's what they're going to go for.
Yes. So now, of course, we all realize that. Let's say you have a WhatsApp chat. You're chatting on WhatsApp, and then you realize. Unless you use certain keywords, want to buy this thing. I like this Nike or like this Adidas. Then you realize, that an advertisement appears on your, while you're browsing on your phone, Facebook or even that. So basically, the phone has the data of you using those words, and certain software in your phone is picking up all those keywords to be sent out to a third party. for them to process and to make it into an advertisement for you.
That's right.
So it would be best, of course, there's a function to disable this totally, which is accessible and known by everyone.
Because currently there really isn't such a thing, right?
I'm not sure. I can't say. I don't dare to say there is none.
Okay.
Because some expert will come and say, oh, there's actually this bung function somewhere here and I just need to click this button.
Sure.
I've not gone so far to go into my phone to look into all the 100 over settings to find that option for me to turn off.
Because that is also a problem, right? Not many people understand, you know, how cookies work or how actually our data is being used, what we are actually agreeing to, because there's a lot of, I suppose, let's use the word jargon, that, you know, comes when these things, when you have these options, and people just don't really understand, and sometimes they just don't care, right?
Yes. Well, I realize that not everyone is so proficient in using mobile phones. A lot of them also don't understand what this word means, all this jargon means.
Yeah.
Some people even struggle how to download a WhatsApp, you know, messenger and try to send things out.
That's
so
right.
What, you know, what, how about doing a bit more further to turn off all these functions to ensure that they do not track your data? So, there's no class you can go to how to, you know, no one has attended a class to attend how to use a mobile phone and how to turn off settings.
So we're stuck there unless we just, like you said, unless we just choose to not use these platforms at all. That is the choice. I mean, that is our basic human right, isn't it? Choice.
That is our choice at the moment, unless someone makes that choice, different choice for us easily on what kind of a button.
Mm-hmm. So I guess then this is what Amnesty is saying, right? That we need to make noise. We need to stop just accepting this as status quo and get the governments to act and get the people to act as well.
Yes. That is correct.
Okay, all right. Anything else you'd like to add? I mean, any last thoughts on this whole thing?
Well, the other alternative I could think of is to the manufacturers of phone is to put on default mode that all phones or more devices are privacy. Basically, your privacy is being protected.
Right.
Nothing goes up until you turn this on.
Mm.
So at the moment, everything is on unless you turn it off.
Mm-hmm.
And if we do that, by default, everything is privacy protected. I think in a way that, you know, our data is secure and the chances of the so-called human rights abuse will go down.
So that was lawyer Fung Ching Leong, whose work focuses on many areas, including internet, social media and cyber laws, and also privacy and data protection laws. So just going back to what actually Facebook's response was, you know, which was basically to defend its snooping of our browsing habits by saying that this is part of the basic function of the internet.
Mm.
So do you guys think that it's time we challenge that idea that it's actually necessary, that, you know, it's and to argue that it's not fundamental to the technology, it's actually fundamental to their business model.
You know why it's difficult to answer this question is because it's something I struggle with all the time and often just give up because it seems insurmountable.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's already there. It's how we function now. It's the new normal. Is there anything that can really be done? And maybe like Fung said earlier, it's I don't even know if it's something that's within individual actions, like whether we need some kind of larger collective action.
Yeah.
And then again, you go back to then what can I as an individual do?
And even
right?
if the argument is then put pressure on the governments to regulate. But governments, I think, could very well want to collude with big tech.
Precisely.
Because of that data is, you know, the Kumi Naidu earlier used the word weaponized. I mean, that's very strong. It definitely can be commodified and, yeah, potentially could be weaponized to whose interests.
And not to mention the fact that until you're in that position, say you're someone who's anti-government, say you're someone who, you know, criticizes them, until you're in the position to be their target.
Yeah.
The average citizen doesn't care
doesn't
all that
care.
Much
mm-hmm.
or doesn't isn't aware mm. of how this data can be used against you.
Mm.
So yeah, collective action seems very difficult to create,
but
yeah.
I mean, aren't all revolutions started by that?
Yes. I don't want to be that person who says don't do anything because I honestly think we should.
Yeah. But, you know, like you said, Sherry, you know, now how many autocrats, how many despots, how many intelligent governments, they're going to have the same idea of targeting Facebook and Google's the extensive and very intensive records of billions of users and use that. So why would they want to act as well, right? As you can say, it could be weaponized. But I don't know. It's a, you know, let us know what you guys think. You know, would you stop using Facebook and Google just so that you could have your privacy intact?
And, you know, to be clear, that includes everything that Facebook and Google owns as well, which is a lot more pervasive than we realize.
And, you know, we now use Google and Facebook to log into so many of our apps and technologies.
And platforms.
And that's the other question, right? The question of what would we then have to give up? What kind of amenities have we gotten used to without realizing how much of our data is being mined?
Yeah.
Are we willing to give those up? And I feel like for a lot of people, the answer might be maybe not. And that's also terrifying, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
It is. It is. And, you know, Mark Zuckerberg, he actually equated the regulation of companies of his to the actions of the most repressive societies. Can you imagine that?
So,
And
some, you mean Sacha Baron Cohen equated?
Mark Zuckerberg equated it.
Right. Yeah.
And
yes.
So Sacha Baron Cohen, who he gave a speech then later at the Anti-Defamation League, and he said that, and, I mean, he was appalled by what Mark Zuckerberg had to say. And he, what he said was that, you know, the Silicon Six, so that's Zuckerberg at Facebook, Sundar Pichai at Google, Larry Page and Sergey Brin at Alphabet, and Susan Wojcicki at YouTube, and Jack Dorsey at Twitter. They are basically the six people in the world who decide what information so much of the world sees. And what he was arguing was that they're all billionaires, they're all Americans, and they all seem to care more about boosting their share price than about protecting democracy. And I think that's something that we really need to think about.
So it comes back to capitalism, and that's the tone of our next story as well. So if you'll stay tuned after the break. If you have any thoughts, tweet us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Leave you first. Don't go anywhere, but first, here's the police with a cautionary message. Every breath you take, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.